Have you ever wanted to be the first to know if aliens really exist? Well, with Nebula, you can be! Nebula is the streaming service that's home to It's Probably Not Aliens, as well as our YouTube channels. And the best part? All of our content goes up early on Nebula. So when we break first contact with ET, you'll be the first to find out. That's right, you'll be able to listen to the next episode of this show before anyone else. Plus, we post bonus content that you won't find any other place. And the best part? By signing up for Nebula at nebula.tv/probablynotaliens, you're directly supporting the show and both of us. So don't wait any longer. Join Nebula today and be the first to know if this time it really is aliens.
Hey everyone, normally we like to do a little bit of a cold open here, but this one is going to have a little bit of some sensitive topics to talk about. So if you are sensitive to discussions of schizophrenia, then just a little warning. We'll talk about that later on in the show.
Would you consider yourself a sweet person?
I'm more of a savory person.
Okay.
I think.
Interesting. So I will say I am also in that vein. I feel like people overloaded with sugar. I don't know. Like people who like breakfast and they're like, their idea of breakfast is all sugary things. It's just like.
That is, we did get breakfast recently with one of our friends, and we had to decide if we wanted savory breakfast, eggs, toast, bacon, things like that, versus do you want what is effectively dessert for breakfast? Do you want pancakes and French toast and waffles and all of that stuff? It's too much. Is this actually what you were referring to when you asked me if I was a sweet person?
I mean, we could also go the other angle. Are you just like a person who likes to leave like little notes and like remember people's birthdays and, you know, like it could be either one. But the big thing is that we're going to a town today that's literally called Dulce, which is the Spanish word for sweet.
Amazing. I used to get that. Is it actually pronounced Dulce though? Because here's the thing. I used to go to, when I lived in Texas, there was a Starbucks nearby and I would go there basically every day to write because I was like a cliche, you know, you bring your laptop into Starbucks and you write there.
Had your
all day.
Little beret.
I had a little beret as I do, and I would order some iced coffee, just some regular iced coffee with what I thought was pronounced cinnamon dulce, but they would always correct me and say, yeah, we'll get you some cinnamon dulce. So now I feel like I'm all back to being confused, because now I've changed to say dulce my entire life now, ever since those Starbucks baristas corrected me. And you're telling me that it's actually dulce?
I thought it was, but let me see if I can, because like normally, like,
see,
I
now
have
I got
this...
you confused.
Well, now, yeah, now
oh,
that I'm
no.
like, because
we put so much authority on Starbucks people that immediately upon hearing a story, you're like, well, maybe they are right.
Yeah. What's it called? Google saying it's dulce. Because I would try to say you were in Texas when you were doing that, right? And I imagine there's more people who know how to pronounce things correctly in Spanish there than I would have gotten.
Potentially.
But dulce, that
well,
makes
I'm glad
sense,
we
though,
did
actually,
this,
because the ch sound is like its own letter of the alphabet, kind of, in Spanish, whereas ch is its own thing. So that kind of makes sense that it wouldn't just be like kind of added in.
Well, I'm glad we did this, or else we would have gotten a lot of emails from people saying that we're still going to get emails from people telling us the correct way to pronounce things. But either way.
Yeah,
thank you, Starbucks people.
Usually I'm...
See, look, I was hard on them a little bit. I was like, we put too much weight into what they say, but I think they were right. Mm-hmm. I think maybe Starbucks workers are good and should unionize also, just like as a side note.
Just so you know, just FYI, might be a thing you want to try out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Usually I'm better at Spanish, but yeah, I messed that one up. Oh, well.
I messed it up too, but we're here now. We've learned. We've grown as people in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah. On that note.
So what is this place?
Who are you? What am I? What is this life?
What is this show? Why are we talking about things? Why are we talking? Why do we have microphones in front of us? Well, that's a great question. This is a podcast called It's Probably Not Aliens. Mm-hmm. And we haven't mentioned aliens yet, but we'll get to it, I imagine. We look at ancient astronaut theory in the show Ancient Aliens, and we debunk some of those conspiracy theories. We look into them while learning about the real life history of people and places and things and cultures. And it's a fun time, and we like it. We've been doing it for over 100 episodes. It's good stuff. My name is Scott Nicewander. I'm the host that knows nothing. Except for now, I know to trust Starbucks workers with my life.
That is the thing that we have figured out. Yeah. If you work at Starbucks, you are always correct.
I'm sorry I doubted you.
My name is Tristan Johnson. I typically pronounce Spanish words correctly, except when it is the word dulce, which makes sense because the French word is douce. So there's that.
Oh.
We're going to Douce, a small town with big tails.
And even bigger taste, because it's sweet.
Yeah, it's a nice, sweet place.
What makes this place so sweet?
What makes this place so sweet is the potential that, according to Ancient Aliens, that there are underground tunnels and caverns around the globe that could be... Okay, let's talk about Ancient Aliens, the show that we have been responding to for over 2 years now.
Yes, tell me about them.
So, Ancient Aliens is... We are now in an episode called Underground Aliens, which is all dedicated to the theme of, what if aliens, but underground?
Oh,
and there's various different places that they go to. One of the places is Dulce, because millions of people around the world believe that Dulce in New Mexico is the site of an elaborate underground base that has alien activity and advanced technology, and that it might be a base for human extraterrestrial alliances where experiments on humans are conducted. According to these claims, there are multiple levels, each with different disturbing purposes like genetic experiments or advanced propulsion systems. And some assert that there have even been violent clashes between the U.S. military, and extraterrestrials that have led to people dying.
This sounds just like a different Area 51.
Yeah.
Right?
What if Area 51 again? Maybe Area 51 is a decoy and this is the real one.
This is the real one. This is the one no one's going to tell you about.
Yeah. So Dulce, is this place, is this underground military base the real deal where all of the alien stuff is going down?
Well, I gotta know now.
Let's see if that holds up to scrutiny. You guys know that the answer, I mean, it's this podcast. You guys, like, I feel like I was trying to be like, can we make a hook? And then, like, every time I try to make a hook, I always default in, like, do you think that this one is the real deal? And you know it's not.
You know it's not. But what if we pretend for, like, a little bit that it could be?
Yeah.
That used to be my job, and I've been slacking, so. But you know what? I believe this wholeheartedly.
All right. So
there's underground tunnel. This is the fresher Area 51, the new one, the Gen Z Area 51. It's cooler. It's hipper.
Sure. It's been picked up. It's a little chuggy actually, getting its start in the 1980s.
That's okay.
That's like, that is, okay. There's this whole chuggy discourse.
Is that even still a thing that people say?
This is my suspicion. So there is this whole article that came out trying to say that the Zoomers make fun of the millennials by calling them chuggy, which is just a word that I've never heard anybody under the age of 50 say.
Well, you've never heard anyone under the age of 50 say it? Huh.
So my conspiracy theory is that millennials got so much hay out of, like, you know, hating boomers because they fucked up the environment and ruined the economy and ruined basically any attempt that anybody younger than them have for a future. But the thing is
Tristan, I love you so much. Do you sometimes forget that we're recording a podcast when we start recording a podcast?
A little bit sometimes. Yeah. Okay. Dulce, New Mexico.
Hip, fresh. We love it.
Yeah. It's an actual town, has a population just under 3,000 people, and it's predominantly populated by people who belong to the Jicarilla Apache Nation.
Okay.
Near Dulce is the town of Lumberton, which was established around 1900 as part of a logging community, and a church for St. Francis of Assisi was built sometime between 1900 and 1907. In 1946, Catholic services started showing up in Dulce, leading to the construction of St. Anthony Chapel in the mid-1960s, and was funded by the Catholic Extension Society grants. This is like the history of Dulce. Today, Dulce is a significant community for the Jicarilla Apache people, which is comparable to, if you want an example, for the Navajo Nation, Window Rock. It's a newer community that started developing in the 1960s. Residents were encouraged to settle there to to allow for oil development in rural areas.
Interesting, interesting.
The town does have a mixed population, including Jicarilla, Apaches, other tribal members, and also a few, also non-Native Americans. So we're deep in, like, Native country in America.
Gotcha.
The Jicarilla are a group of Eastern Apaches that are residing in New Mexico. They speak an Athabascan language. Jicarilla comes from Mexican Spanish, meaning little basket, which refers to the small baskets they use as drinking vessels. And historically, they lived a semi-nomadic lifestyle in the Sangre de Cristo Mountains in the plains of southern Colorado and northern New Mexico, hunting, gathering, facing, and they faced significant hardships in the 1800s and 1900s because of, guess what might have caused their issues in that time?
I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of things, but was this when there was like a very specific president who was in charge and made everyone a terrible little trail? A trail of...
A bit too late for the Trail of Tears. This is
okay,
like
a little bit for that.
Like a 100-year period, basically just as American settlers started moving out west. They were displaced, they were broken treaties, and they also were exposed to disease. By 1887, they got a reservation, which was expanded in 1907 to support ranching and agriculture projects. But they're believed
So displacement was a part of it.
Yeah, for sure. And the Jicarilla Apaches are also believed to have migrated from Canada sometime in the 1500s. So that is like their land is bounded usually by the by four sacred rivers in northern New Mexico and southern Colorado. So this is just like a little backdrop of to what this town is like. But there is this claim that the conspiracy is that there's an underground base beneath the Archuleta Mesa exists, which is said to be jointly operated by extraterrestrials in the U.S. government. So this all comes from one guy.
One guy.
Yes. The idea of there being a base under Dulce, New Mexico comes from a guy by the name...
This is a theory of one single individual made up. Or discovered. Sorry, I'm on this side now.
Yeah,
this adventurer, this brave soul, discovered this and spread the word to the masses to tell us who was this person.
A businessman from Albuquerque named Paul Benowitz.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah.
American hero, Paul Benowitz.
A native from Kansas and a person who had a bachelor's degree from Arizona State but had no formal training in electronics, did end up becoming a radio electronics engineer for the Coast Guard during World War II and worked as an...
Well, he must have been good enough at it then.
Yeah, no formal training, but definitely hands-on, and worked as an engineer for several CBS stations. By 1953, he moved to New Mexico, working in sales, and later started his own industrial sales company called Thunder Scientific in 1966.
Thunder
so
Scientific.
An autodidact who studied specifically, who got into electronics because of World War II, basically.
All right.
He became a member of something called the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization in the 1970s, which you can just imagine what their interest is. And specifically, he got really into, in the 1970s, the topic of cattle mutilations in the late 1970s, which actually was...
Interesting.
We've done an episode on before.
We've done a video, or an episode,
and
yes.
This region around Dulce is where a lot of these cattle mutilations were happening. So we're kind of in that area.
Oh, well, look at that. A chaser to this episode if you want to re-listen to that one or listen to it for the first time.
Hey, another episode to reconsider, because it's also that's one of our grosser ones, because it's about mutilation. Anyways, so he took an interest in these cattle mutilations, and this was basically his inroad into studying UFOs, and he started to use his knowledge of electronics to study what he thought were unusual sightings or signals in the area. It led him to claim that there was the existence of an underground base near Dulce, which was supposedly involved in a 1979 conflict known as the Dulce War, and this idea spread to the UFO community because of Benowitz's entrepreneurial spirit.
All right.
So starting in 1979, the idea is that he thought that he was able to intercept communications between the military and UFOs, including an actual like fight or battle that happened between the two.
Huh.
And since then, he started believing that he was intercepting these communications. He gained attention through UFO researchers and even US senators. By 1983, his alleged communications with aliens and sightings were reported in the media, and his relationship with the government was also, because of the whole military background, was also a big deal to people in the conspiracy UFO sphere, because they're like, oh, like this guy has actual military ties and
this guy knows his stuff.
And he is intercepting we can alien trust stuff. Him. Yeah, like he knows something because he was in the Coast Guard during World War II.
Well, I mean, it's similar. It's like similar to sort of stuff that we're seeing right now with the hearings in the U.S. of people who
David Grush
are in David Grush, yeah, where people are like, we can trust him. He knows his stuff. He was there. He was in the military.
I mean, that guy actually was in the military and rather high up. This is a guy who was in the Coast Guard during World War II.
Okay. You can't just say that. I know you're Canadian, but like I'm gonna get so much slack now from people who are like, but it's just the Coast Guard.
Okay,
right?
Okay. Let me rephrase that to be a little bit more to get my point across. He was like David Grush was like a high up military official. If there were aliens, he would definitely be the guy who would know about them. This guy was in the Coast Guard.
you didn't rephrase anything.
Well, yeah, like the thing is, like he wasn't like a top brass general. So like, if there was anything that was top secret, he would not have been privy to that knowledge.
Got okay. All right. That's fair. And I apologize in advance to everyone.
The military is a very hierarchical organization. And David Grush and this guy are on different level. We're on different levels of the military.
Yes. I think that is fair to say.
Now, in the 80s, he was convinced that he had discovered this secret underground base. And he thought it was populated specifically by gray aliens and humans.
Always with the gray aliens.
Always with the gray aliens. And in 1988, he released a paper that he titled Project Beta, which detailed how the supposed base might be attacked, further cementing his legacy within conspiracy theory circles. So this is the guy who started everything. He wrote all of these like things, and he really advocated in the UFO community that he was intercepting information or intercepting communication that showed that there were aliens at this base, that there was conflict at this base, and that there were definitely like the grays, everything very specific. And this caught on like wildfire. And now Dulce has become a legend in the UFO community. Another person who also helped bring it out was a guy named John Lear, who was the son of the founder of Learjet, which I think is fun.
Okay.
And he also was a aviator and pilot for the CIA during Vietnam and became a influential conspiracy theorist in the 1980s. In 87, Lear claimed that on Paranet that the U.S. government had contacts with extraterrestrials and used popular films to frame them as benign, quote unquote, space brothers. He also described the secret government committee Majestic 12, which I feel like could be its own video or own episode in and of itself.
Episode of this. What is Paranet?
In the 90s is when, like, you know, the World Wide Web came online, where there was the internet as we know it today, where everything was connected together in one big thing. Before the World Wide Web really took hold, there were still things like the internet, but they were not the way that you would think of them today. Like, they were not all unified under one network.
It wasn't a World Wide Web.
Yeah, so, like, there were a lot of, like, random Usenet groups or BBSs, like random forums and stuff like that. But in order to contact them, you had to know the number of the modem that you were hooking up to, and people would just set them up themselves. So you would have to use, like, phone lines to communicate. But people who invested the money for servers to do that, early adopters and such, would take that on, and they would watch it, or they would be able to communicate. It was very dangerous. It was interesting, but also dangerous, because this was also a thing that white supremacists used to connect with each other. But I also imagine the people in the paranormal and stuff like that also got into it, because this was a time when people who were really into computers were, into their niche interests, right? Like, normal, well-adjusted
people.
They were nerds at that time.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense. So it was just a bunch of nerds talking about UFO stuff, potentially.
Yeah.
Before the World Wide Web.
Yeah, exactly. Majestic 12, if I remember correctly, is another like well-known UFO conspiracy theory. Yeah, it's another one. It's an entire other topic in and of itself.
We'll have to talk about that at some point. Subscribe. this is when we would be like, like and subscribe if you want to hear us do more of that
stuff. Yeah.
You want to hear us cover that topic.
Mm-hmm. Lear alleged that the government has been for the last 40 years covering up UFOs, including the recovery of flying saucers and government-sanctioned alien abductions. He claimed that human mutilations occurred and referred to the altercation at Dulce Base that led to the human casualties. So Lear claims that there was this mix of existing conspiracy theories and integrated Paul Benowitz's narrative into his work. And despite like heavy criticism of Benowitz's claims, influenced UFO conspiracy discourse. So Lear was like a big shot in the UFO space.
Sure.
And he latched on to Benowitz's claims and integrated it into his greater claim that there was this long government cover-up of UFOs, starting with basically Roswell.
Gotcha. So we're taking different ideas, we're merging them together.
Precisely.
Make one big idea.
Yes, exactly. The other thing too that gave it a little bit more credence is that this was during the Cold War, and in the area there were underground missile installations. So there were some military-ish installations. No, there were some military installations. They were mostly missile silos, which are basically places where they just sit and tend to a nuclear bomb in case they ever need to destroy the entire world. To this day, that still happens. To this day, there's still like these bases all over America, especially in like the big flat states where there's just these bases where two guys sit down in a room, or girls, or non-binaries. It's the military's inclusive now, where they sit there waiting for orders from Washington to blow up everything. And it's so badly maintained. There's this whole thing about America's nuclear arsenal, about how
it's bad.
Like how not only are the missiles poorly maintained, like there's this whole book called Command and Control by Eric Schlosser that like goes into like how there's been several incidents where like just like technical errors happened with the nuclear weapons. Like they use very outdated technology kind of intentionally to prevent like hacking and stuff like that.
Hacking and stuff.
But
yeah.
It also means that like there's times where like in shockingly modern days, there's still like punch cards and stuff involved in the nuclear arsenal. And sometimes that leads to bugs. Like one time there was a missile that fired its retro rockets while in the silo, which is just like, not good, because they're all basically like just like rockets ready to shoot off to anywhere in the world. Right. Mm-hmm. So those things happen all the time. But also because like the job of being the person who babies one of these nuclear bombs is, you could imagine, extremely boring. There's been a bit of a lapse in diligence in these.
Yeah, there's been people who like fall asleep during it. There's been people who like leave doors open and like unlocked and things like that.
The most famous story was that there was a time where a pizza delivery guy showed up at one of these places and the door was unlocked and the people running the place were asleep.
Pizza delivery guy could have caused some mayhem.
Oh man, if that guy just must have been like, if I wanted to get into the history books, I could do that right now.
I could do it.
Yeah.
But these are all man-made atrocities and horrors beyond my comprehension. What about the aliens?
True. Man, you're the one keeping me on track today. This is like the major thing about like the, so anyways, like the military was there in that area. As we know, the American Southwest has a lot of federal land, a lot of military bases, everything. So it's not insane to think that there's going to be a military presence in this region.
Mm-hmm.
But the extreme natures have also been described as fairly implausible. Like, for example, a political scientist by the name of Michael Barkun has written on the concept of conspiracy theories, including the lore surrounding the underground base in Dulce. And in the context, he studied the Dulce story in the context of ufology, suggesting that the Cold War underground installations in the area provided a plausibility to the rumors and made the legend attractive for those interested in UFOs. But the more outlandish claims, such as experiments on abductees and firefights between them, are what he described as, and I love this quote, well outside even the most far-fetched reports of secret underground bases. He also
not having any of
it. He also reports reported in his book that this built on the idea that there were cattle mutilations in the area, which checks out with the story that we went with. And he began to report in the night, and which started in the mid-1970s and then sort of peaked with like as the cattle mutilations seemed to like precede the starting to claim that there's like secret bases there. Mm-hmm. So you can see the sort of through line of how people started buying into it and built the legend and given its credibility. And also Barkin noted that by the early 1980s, the Colorado, New Mexico border region where Dulce is located had become a significant hotspots for reports of cattle mutilations and UFO sightings, which then gave the Dulce base legend even more mystique. Also, as this started to become more and more popular and ufologists started getting more and more into the story, then local residents started reporting unexplained sightings, but again, without conclusive evidence.
I want to get in on this story. I've seen stuff. Talk to me, local resident Scott Nicewander.
Yeah. And it got even further it got even more credibility because people like the Jicarilla Apache Nation, specifically under the leadership of a guy named Ty Vicente, acknowledged these stories, but openly admitted that he acknowledged them to promote tourism because it has become a tourist destination as a result of this. And
well, hold on, because that's not necessarily means that they aren't, like, you can promote tourism to something that is true, though. Mm-hmm. Like, I can promote tourism to the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. That doesn't mean that there isn't the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. It is there.
Yes.
So aliens exist. You hear what I'm saying?
I see where this is going. Yeah.
All right. I just want to make sure you're following my logic here.
But what I will say is that it has promoted tourism in the town, and even in 2016 hosted something called the Dulce-based UFO Conference. So it has gotten itself a bit of tourist money and built up the economy of Dulce. And so the Jicarilla Apache Nation has sort of leaned into it in order to help out with their grow the local economy. Speaking of which, Scott, do you want to help grow our podcast's local economy?
Yeah, I would love to. How do we do that?
Usually by taking a tiny break for some products and or services.
Ooh, I love those.
All right, let's do it.
Hey, we're back.
We're back. Dulce. So what's the truth about the claims about Dulce? About, is this a secret underground base full of aliens?
What's the sweet, sweet truth? You see what I did there?
So thank you. It's primarily pushed by people like Paul Benowitz. The conspiracy is primarily rooted in the accounts of Paul Benowitz, who's been discredited by the scientific community, mainly because of one thing that I neglected to mention throughout this so far. And that is that at a certain point in his life, Paul Benowitz was diagnosed with a condition known as paranoid schizophrenia. And that's where things get a little bit more complicated here. So paranoid schizophrenia is a subtype of schizophrenia that is primarily characterized by delusions and specifically suspicions that increase during the course of the illness. Paranoid schizophrenia would, it's a serious mental illness. It's probably say that, like, as far as mental illnesses go, it's probably considered one of the most serious ones that you can have.
Yeah.
And it can cause individuals to experience delusions and hallucinations. It can lead to distorted perceptions of reality. And also it specifically causes an inability to have insight into your own mental state. You end up having psychotic breaks, hallucinations, delusions, but also you're not aware that you're having them.
Mm-hmm.
Benowitz was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, and it probably is like his whole, all of his claims about intercepting communications and such like that seem much more likely to be a result of him having psychotic breaks or delusions rather than actually intercepting alien communications, because paranoid schizophrenia causes something called functional impairment, which affects a lot of different, it damages a lot of their ability to do things. And it means that a lot of people who have paranoid schizophrenia have trouble holding on to jobs and getting things like disability compensation. Individuals with paranoid schizophrenia have a difficult time functioning in everyday life and struggle to maintain employment and social relationships. And so as a result of their delusions. So that's the main part of, like, why these claims all come from one person who is diagnosed with an extremely serious mental illness that is specifically linked to having delusions and paranoia, which then got latched onto by the UFO community and taken seriously. And I'll get into why that's a problem later when I decide to make you sad.
Great. Love that. I'm glad we're bringing back that section. Yeah.
Somebody, when we were together, didn't you say that, like, either it was like Emily who said it was like a necessary part of the show or something like that?
It was Emily. Emily said it was that we should bring it back. She was like, that's a good part of the show. The part where Tristan makes you sad.
I'm glad Emily is my ally in this.
Emily is very, like, SEO, like, marketing branded. And so she's like, that is a part. That's a section of your podcast. That's a part. You gotta capitalize on that.
Okay. I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that it's, like, important. It's that it's buzzworthy or something.
I think it's both.
Okay. I'll take it. You know what, Emily? We're allies now. We're an alliance.
Good. I could use more allies as a queer person. Thank you both. Tristan finally decided to be an ally.
Yeah, just now.
just starting right now.
Right until this moment, I was the hugest homophobe on the planet, but I decided to change my mind because Emily decided that I don't know. This is getting very strange. Anyways, there's another another aspect also to this that makes the Dulce base myth a little bit more of a problem, which is that it's very similar to something called the Shaver Mystery, which was a science fiction narrative that featured malevolent beings in spaceships.
Huh.
It was a science fiction story from the mid-1940s about malevolent subterranean beings who pilot disc-shaped spaceships. It was written by a guy named Richard S. Shaver, who rose to prominence in the science fiction world in the 40s with stories about underground civilizations and ancient astronauts.
Hey, Tristan, we can't just gloss over the fact that his name is Dick Shaver.
Dick Shaver?
Mm-hmm.
Dick Shaver. Now, there's a guy who needs to be sponsored by Manscaped. this guy brought to you by Manscaped.
Yep.
Dick Shaver. Man.
I'm so sorry to everyone named Richard, but that is how I'm going to... Anytime I see a name, Richard something, I will always check to see if it's funnier to say it with Dick, whatever your last name is.
Or the inverse. One of my favorite jokes of all time was a comedian on Twitter, or a comedian on TikTok by the name of Violet, who just said once, "Eat a bag of Richards." And I loved it so much to the point where I think it to myself like 1,000 times a day. Okay.
That's really good.
So the Shaver Mystery and the Dulce Myth have subterranean beings who are believed to be working with humans on advanced technology and experiments.
Great.
They also have underground tunnels and secret bases hidden from the public. They also have drawn heavy media attention and have been the subject of books, television shows, and conferences. And they're both, probably fiction, because they're both like the same thing.
You know, can I say this? I've not mentioned superhero stuff in a while on this podcast, and I feel like I have been slacking a little bit. The MCU currently is in this sort of like limbo state of what are they going to do with the Fantastic Four? There's really been no announcements here and there. And I've always been pretty firm that I think it should be like a period piece set in like the 60s or wherever, just in the past, all about not Dr. Doom, but Mole Man and the underground, the subterranean people that he commands.
Mm-hmm.
And like this feels like they've already done Eternals, which is basically ancient alien. It's ancient astronaut theory, right? Eternals is
literally
just
inspired
ancient
by it,
aliens.
Right?
It's literally inspired by Chariots of the Gods. And it's like, if they're going to just do that, let's go all out and just have, let's take this underground caverns, subterranean civilizations and things like that. Put a little Fantastic Four in there. And you've got a fun little period piece sci-fi thriller, I think. I'm just saying it could work. That's my piece. Everyone send that to Kevin.
Kevin Feige. Do this. Mm-hmm. Scott says so. Do you think that Kevin Feige has seen one NerdSync video?
No.
What if he had?
I don't think he has. There are other directors and stuff who definitely watch YouTube. Not my stuff. Kevin's a producer. I don't think he cares what other people think. I think he's just like, I'm going to do whatever makes money.
Hey, I don't know if he actually even likes comic books.
I think he likes comic books. I think, I don't know. I met him once very briefly.
Oh yeah.
How'd
that go?
Very, I mean, like literally 5 seconds where we passed each other and I was like, oh, hey, this was like back in 2015. I was just like, you're doing great. At the time he was MCU 2015. Good stuff.
Top of its game.
Yeah. That was like when Civil War just came out. I was like, this is good stuff. I like it. It's good. Anyway, that's all. And he just said, thanks. That's the only interaction we had. So.
All right. Do you want to have another conversation with him now that he did that interview where he was like, we didn't realize that television shows require writers.
Yeah, now I've got some notes, Kevin. I actually do have a lot of notes about how you're running things, more so than I did like 8 years ago. Maybe you gotta just put people in charge of TV shows, have people run a show, maybe like a showrunner, perhaps. That'd be wild.
I have a theory, and that is that maybe the thing that makes comic books great isn't that they're a bunch of flashy special effects reels, but also that they have writers that have things they want to do.
Whoa.
And
whoa.
It might be that
okay,
you should
slow down.
maybe movies should be more than a bunch of special effects driven scenes with some brief narrative connective tissue and some tie-ins to future franchises. Maybe there's more to movies than that.
No, I think movies are a way to try out new technologies that will make it in the long run cheaper to make movies. I think that's what it did.
Speaking of which, SAG-AFTRA just got a deal. Woo! So
good job.
Yeah.
Good job, strikes. Good job, strikes and unions. We love it.
There's a lot of labor politics in this episode randomly. We talked about Starbucks and this. And yeah. Okay. So the other thing too is that so there's a lot of similarities between the Dulce base tales and this science fiction story from the 40s, which is interesting. Furthermore, the Dulce myth has had itself perpetuated over time by the people who live in Dulce because it's a tourist destination and also gets a lot of clicks in the media. So ufologists and conspiracy theorists visit the town to investigate the claims of this base. There's also an annual Dulce base UFO conference, although it seems like the last one that ever happened was in 2016. And it has been the subject of books, television shows, and documentaries that get more and more attention to the area and bring in more tourism. It's also been linked to other claims of the paranormal. Dulce also has a significant Bigfoot population, and there's a lot of Bigfoot sighting.
I was gonna say, hold on. They have.
That's where all the Bigfoots are.
Bigfoot population. That's where they all are.
No, there's a side thing is that also Dulce is a place where there's other types of paranormal stuff. A lot of Bigfoot people are also in the Dulce.
Gotcha.
And some people have also pointed out that maybe believing in this is there's actually a little bit of controversy in the community of Dulce, because some are like, hey, this brings in tourism and it's great. But also it also is it's not extremely real. And so I imagine that the people of Dulce, especially the indigenous nation that lives there, are is it cool that we're embracing this crankeries and bringing a bunch of weird tourists into town because it brings money in? And
I think what makes it especially tricky is what you were talking about earlier, and I think we'll probably get into it here shortly, but it feels like capitalizing off of the paranoia of someone who had severe mental health issues.
He passed away in the early 2000s, Benowitz, so that's another thing. The lore also has been dumped into a broader context of conspiracy theories and pseudoscience. It got a lot of media attention, and so it's been integrated into the UFO lore. People who are in deep in the UFO circles have heard of Dulce before, and it's just a sort of fabric of unproven assertions. And again, this is where the big problem comes in, is that, and this is the part that I kind of got mad about it. So the Dulce myth is big in UFO circles, and it got picked up by people who use it for stories. But again, it all comes back to Paul Benowitz's story. And the big thing that really kind of got me angry is that belief in conspiracy theories that have their sources that are come from things like the delusions of people suffering from something like paranoid schizophrenia can be extremely harmful to people who have mental health issues and for having an empathic understanding of these conditions. It can be so a lot of times schizophrenia is one of the symptoms of schizophrenia is delusional thinking. Believing in conspiracy theories reinforces that delusional thinking and makes it more difficult for individuals who have the condition to distinguish between reality and their delusions, which you can imagine this thing that they basically struggle with their whole lives.
Yeah.
Individuals with it also buying into these conspiracy communities also means that individuals who have paranoid schizophrenia don't typically seek medical treatment, not acknowledging that they have a condition and taking medication that can help with it or having therapy that can help with it or a combination.
Sure.
It also reinforces feelings of anxiety, distrust, and feeling of losing control. It can lead to a cycle of negative thinking and exacerbate the symptoms of paranoid schizophrenia. And it can, it also will further isolate them. Believing in conspiracy theories, as we've seen with QAnon and such, it alienates you from the regular people in your life and tends to make you more isolated and confused and lonely, which then creates a decreased quality of life. And again, if you have a condition like paranoid schizophrenia, being left alone can really exacerbate your symptoms because you have no person to keep you in check.
I can only imagine. Yeah, that would make it feel like it would make it worse.
Yeah. Can you imagine? I'm trying to put it in here because I wanted to make sure that this is done. Imagine a condition where you constantly have to second guess whether or not what you are seeing or hearing is real. And furthermore, your brain has a predilection towards seeing conspiracies in everything. And you have to constantly be checking yourself to make sure that it's not hallucinations. It's not, you're not seeing things. It's not a conspiracy. It's just life. Like I've been debunking conspiracy theories on the internet for over 10 years now. And I have seen I've gotten very, very sad comments where like I would get a comment from somebody. I got a really long comment once that claimed that because my name's Tristan, that I had this like whole thing tied back to to King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, which meant that I was obviously a Templar and like, you know, into this like great big worldview. And then I checked out his YouTube channel and it was very into a concept called gang stalking, which is a thing you might hear about on the internet, which is like sort of online community that is primarily people suffering from paranoid schizophrenia, because it's like this concept that they're being stalked by people, but because it's not one person following them, they're being stalked by a gang of people. And so like this guy had like videos of him like going out and filming cars and stuff like that to try and keep things. And I'm just like, this person's life is extremely tragic. And if you don't have a support network or you get the treatment for these conditions, you can imagine that this will ruin your life.
And then imagine taking that and turning someone's experiences with that sort of condition into a tourist trap.
Or just like, just buying into it. Like you imagine like legitimizing the delusions and like that could further prevent people from seeking therapy or getting the help they need. Furthermore, I would also argue on the other angle is that as like this story gets exposed, one of the things that I was primarily worried about when I realized that that was going to be the discovery, that was the crux of this this episode, was that again, and the media and, you know, a lot of portrayals of people with paranoid schizophrenia do this, which is that we further stereotype and stigmatize people who have not only paranoid schizophrenia, but other mental health issues, especially ones that have delusions as part of them. And I think that like this results that like, for example, I worried that by like, you know, talking about this subject, that we would be in a situation where we're reinforcing the idea that people with mental health issues might not be capable of making rational thinking or that they can't be trusted. And I think that I want to make sure that like there's probably, given just sheer numbers, there's like a non-zero amount of people who have paranoid schizophrenia who listen to this podcast. And I wanted to reinforce that paranoid schizophrenia is a very serious condition and they are definitely aware of that.
Yes.
And that, but it is like, you can still have a very like rich and fulfilling life as long as you make sure to like take care of your treatment and keep your support network going. And when this kind of stuff happens, it's very easy for us to to use that as a way to dismiss people with schizophrenia. And they're like, you know, like these are real people. They're suffering from very real problems. And I think that it's important that we don't use this as a condemnation of people with the condition overall, even though it is definitely a very real reason why we should not just buy into this Dulce myth. But also at the same time, like, I think that Benowitz might have been like, I think it was cruel for the UFO community to take somebody's like private psychological crisis and turn it into a part of this overall narrative that they're trying to build. And conspiracy communities are rife with this because, as you can imagine, conspiracy communities and people who suffer from delusions, like mental illnesses that come with delusions, are fairly high overlaps. And this part, it's very much like we haven't talked about on this show yet about how conspiracy communities, especially in like UFO spaces, like just do that to draw in people with these conditions and typically push them away
take
from
advantage.
The treatment that they need.
Yeah. Well, and it's tricky too, because like it feels like we're trying to balance two things, right? On one hand, you don't want to fully jump in and believe and support and further exacerbate these, you know, any sort of paranoia and delusions and things. But on the other hand, like you were saying, you don't want to immediately dismiss someone just because they have a condition like schizophrenia and say that everything that they see and believe is not real. And so it's one of those, it's like a tricky sort of balance where like...
I have a good example. I have a good example for a more common mental condition. So I used to, like, there's a lot of people out there who have depression and anxiety. I think like almost a quarter of people have depression, I think. Anxiety also way more common. And
at least half of the people on this podcast.
Yeah. And you can tell that, like, I don't have depression, but I do tend to get anxiety from time to time.
Oh, I got both, baby.
And you can, so you can understand then if that somebody who cares about you would not just believe on the surface when you say things, especially things about yourself that come from those periods. Like, you know that if you are close to somebody with anxiety or with depression, that they are prone to having thought processes that are not based in reality. And it's your job really to help ground them and bring them back from that place. And Paul Benowitz, it seems, did not have somebody to pull him back from that place. And furthermore, it would be like if you have depression and you're like, you know, I'm worthless, everything I do is terrible. And then somebody from another community comes in and is like, you are worthless, you are terrible. And you can imagine just how damaging that could be to somebody who is struggling with like depression or anxiety. But instead, if their condition is not depression or anxiety, but the fact that they have like literally like hallucinations and and see malicious intent behind everything, that could be way, way worse.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. As a person who, you know, we talked about it in a couple weeks back, where all of my technology started dying, my camera, my computer. I was in one of the worst spots of my recent life mentally. And if I didn't have a support system of friends and my wife and even my family reaching out to me to make sure that I was okay, if I didn't have that, I would be in a, I don't know how I would have, you know, gone through that without all those people trying to help me and pull me up and make sure that my self-talk wasn't as bad as I was making it out to be. So yep. I think that's a really good example. Yeah, it's
and as somebody who has an XY chromosome and somebody who is left-handed and somebody who has ADHD, I had many of the risk factors for schizophrenia. And
I didn't know left-handed was a part of it.
These are all correlational, but schizophrenia is very much like a problem with like the it's architecture of your brain. Yeah. Like it's very it's physical in a lot of ways. And so and a lot of those are signs that your brain isn't wired normally like everybody else's.
Yeah.
So those can all be risk factors. Luckily, nobody in my family has it, and symptoms tend to show up when you're in your early 20s. So that hasn't happened. So I'm lucky on that front. But
well, you're still young. You're still in your 20s. It could happen. I mean, we just got to keep out for it. You have a birthday coming up. What are you going to be, 22?
As this releases, my birthday was a couple weeks ago and I am 35. Yeah.
Fair enough.
So, but yeah, like going back, like this not only would hurt the people who are having their delusions legitimized rather than, you know, brought back from them. But furthermore, it then spreads this idea, like as these stories get like unearthed and, you know, debunked, it then builds this whole stigmatization against people who have this condition, which I think makes things even worse, because I think like even to this day, like I think that when I bring up the term paranoid schizophrenia, like it even without even unconsciously brings up all sorts of illusions and thought processes. Like there's always the idea that people with paranoid schizophrenia commit like, you know, do like horrible crimes when they're more likely to be the victim of abuse and crimes than actually committing them. And like all sorts of things. Like there's a lot of talk about, and this is the other thing too, that I also want to bring up is just like, we talk a lot about mental illness in our current, like, you know, we're very aware of mental illness these days, but very often it's about the more common conditions, things like depression and anxiety that like, again, like a quarter of people have. I feel like we don't like maybe we need to have more awareness that there are people with mental illnesses that are more serious and that can be very debilitating and very often like require like some people with very advanced cases of paranoid schizophrenia might need like lifelong institutionalization or might not be able to live on their own. And that kind of support is not. The amount of awareness campaigns doesn't do much when like they can't get like antipsychotic drugs or psychotherapy that like, you know, beyond just like seeing a therapist once a week, but like, you know, going to like an institution or to like, you know, have like regular daily things to keep you on I was about to say on brand.
Free drugs. Tristan is saying free drugs
for everyone.
Look, I have my ADHD medication is so expensive, and that's just ADHD, a thing that I've been dealing with my entire life without medication, with unknowingly. I can only imagine the sort of drug treatment for something like this, and even just therapy in general as well, on top of everything, it's all expensive.
Mm-hmm. And if you need something Thorazine, I can't even imagine how expensive something like that would be.
It's too much. We can't get, it's, yeah, it's free drugs.
Yeah.
Free drugs, free therapy, free healthcare? What?
Wouldn't that be nice?
A lot of political talk on this episode. So weird.
Free, what's it called? Free drugs, Canada. Get on that shit.
Free drugs.
Free dental.
Let's make it work.
One place where you can get free drugs is, no, if you...
You've successfully, I was going to say, I think you have successfully brought back the part where Tristan makes you sad, and also kind of like the part where Tristan makes you mad a little bit.
Tristan makes you mad, sad, and radicalizes you.
And rad. Yeah. Mad, sad, and rad, as in rad stands for radical.
Yep.
Hell yeah. And if you are rad, if you are rad Chad, if you're a sad, mad, rad Chad, you can go follow us at Probs Not Aliens on Twitter and Blue Sky.
Yeah.
And Tristan's looking up a Blue Sky code for you, I imagine.
Yep.
We're giving away Blue Sky codes.
I reset my cookies, so I have to relog in.
That's okay. I bet I have one. I'm going to... Tristan, shut up. I'm going to do the code this week. You've been giving out so many free codes. Everyone likes you more than they like me. So here's my free Blue Sky code.
That is not true.
Free to a good home. BSKY-social-MZQMX-SPN-73. First come, first serve. Join us on Blue Sky and tag us to let you know, to let us know that you joined. Tristan,
mm-hmm.
You do other stuff online that makes people sad, mad, rad chads.
Yeah, theoretically. I may have a channel called Step Back where I talk about history and why the past is important for understanding the world that we live in. If this is coming out on the day that I think it is, then the video that should be the most recent will be on the land back movement and why land back is good, which is very apropos. And we're talking about indigenous nations here a little bit.
Yeah.
Scott, it's also December now. And if I wanted to know
December.
About a time where Batman sang Silent Night.
Do it.
Where would I go?
Yep, I knew that was going to happen.
You knew Batman Silent Night specifically?
As soon as you said it's December, I was like, I know exactly which one he's doing. That's an old video of mine. Tristan loves this little goof and gaff where he pulls up really old videos of mine, but that's okay. I think that one was a fun one. And you get to see my great Christmas sweater that I've had for so many years now. That's on my YouTube channel, NerdSync, NERDSYNC. It's all one word.
Mm-hmm.
You know that already.
You make good stuff all the time. You just made one.
I made videos about comics. Yeah, I made videos about comics and superheroes and cartoons. And I've done a couple video game ones. I just did one recently. I mean, hopefully I've done more by the time this comes out. But I've done one about why the Scooby-Doo... I played through Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed to try and solve a mystery that has been haunting me for 20 years.
And judging that you're 21 years old.
It's been haunting me since I was a small little babe, and I'm definitely not 31 years old. And you know what else, Tristan? Both of our videos and stuff are on Nebula, as well as this podcast, which you can find at nebula.tv/probablynotaliens. You can also listen to episodes a week early over there. We're back at it, baby.
Yeah.
Which is very exciting.
Scott's setup is back in action and he's like ripping and roaring.
I'm ripping and roaring. I edited 2 podcasts yesterday. We're back going. So thank you for Tristan for filling in for the past like month and a half. I appreciate it. Thank you to everyone who writes reviews of this show on Apple Podcasts and leaves feedback on Spotify. Those always make me really happy. I get notifications anytime someone does something on Spotify. I get emails about it. It's very fun. And make sure you tell your friends about the show. That's how we grow. We're growing, baby. And it's because of you. And a great place to send your friends is a very simple website, probsnotaliens.com. It's got links to everything. In fact, the only thing it doesn't have right now is links to our Blue Sky accounts, which we should probably do so people can follow mm-hmm. us. I'll try to remember to set that up. But either way, that's it. So until next time, my name is Scott Nicewander.
I'm Tristan Johnson, and the truth is out there. Probably.
Can I say that was sweet?
Oh, that was dulce.
That was dulce.
That was dulce de leche.
Yummy, yummy.